Hey everyone, and welcome to this special feature edition of the Risky Business Podcast. I'm Patrick Gray. This podcast is brought to you by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, and it is the second in a series of podcasts we're doing here at Risky.biz that are all about cyber policy. The Hewlett Foundation funds a lot of interesting people and work in the cybersecurity space. So the idea behind this series is pretty simple. We talk to Hewlett's grant recipients or experts in Hewlett's network about pressing policy issues and turn those conversations into podcasts. The whole idea here is to get some policy perspectives out there, some good policy perspectives out there among the Risky Biz audience, which, funnily enough, includes a lot of policymakers. In this podcast, we're speaking with Catherine Charlotte. She currently serves as the Director of the Technology and International Affairs Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Prior to joining Carnegie, Kate served as the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Cyber Policy, where she managed the development of the US Department of Defense Cyber Policy and Strategy, also its development of its cyber capabilities and the expansion of its international relationships. The conversation that you're about to hear essentially covers what the state of affairs is when it comes to militaries and their actions in the cyber domain. Of course, it was only a few weeks ago that reports were published claiming the United States government had launched a cyber attack against Iranian weapons systems. We'll hear from Kate about what she thinks that all means. And then we're going to talk about all sorts of stuff, really. The blurring of the line between what warrants a law enforcement response versus a military response. What the path to this situation, you know, this state of affairs has actually looked like. So on and so on. But to kick things off, I asked Kate to tell us what this concept of defending forward actually means. Over the last couple of years, we've heard that term bandied about by all sorts of officials, but everyone seems to have a different definition of what defend forward actually means. Here, Kate shares her definition, which is somewhat authoritative. Here she is.
So I actually don't think defend forward is particularly new, or at least as new as many folks talk about. But I would say there's two components to defend forward. One is geographic and one is temporal. So, I mean, the geographic aspect of this is that DoD cyber operators will operate outside of U.S. borders. That's where the forward comes in. That we're defending, looking outside of the borders, trying to disrupt malicious cyber activity closer to its source. And this should surprise exactly nobody, right? Because the Department of Defense's whole mission is to operate outside the United States in cyberspace. It obviously comes with complexities in terms of geographic distribution of information systems that don't exist in traditional domains.
Even more complicated when people are using, you know, like anonymization networks, so you don't necessarily even know where they are. That's been quite the pickle, you know?
Or you can't predict, you know? Yeah. You don't know what the geographic overlay is going to be, and that's what's really challenging. Mm. But then the other aspect of defend forward is looking at it, it's more about how often are we engaging? This is where you start to hear concepts like persistent engagement coming out of Cyber Command, which is the hot term that everybody's using. I tend to actually prefer the way that it's discussed in the DoD cyber strategy, which is day-to-day competition. But both of those things essentially mean you are operating at a level below armed conflict. You're not just waiting for the big one or the conflict, the war to occur and then use cyberspace operations in that context. You are working every day to make it harder for adversaries to neutralize their efforts, to change the way that they're thinking, and in CyberCom's words, to make kind of constant contact. So I think it's really, the concept is an update, but it gets to this idea that we are not going to have just a very simple binary between peacetime and wartime, but that there's this gray area in between, which is really where Russia is operating, where we find ourselves in today, where it's not exactly peacetime and it's not exactly wartime, yet nonetheless, the Department of Defense needs to be involved.
Yeah. So it's about, I guess, not sitting on the sidelines anymore and jumping in and being active in that domain. And that makes a lot of sense, particularly when the United States and other countries are dealing with adversaries. You know, there was a time there where we kind of hoped that states, governments would be sensible when it came to their actions, their cyber actions, and that didn't quite work out, did it? Because we had China engaging in, you know, massive campaigns of IP theft and business intelligence espionage, and we had Russia with all of its political interference and things like that. Now, these are things that I would expect would be difficult for the US government to authorize similar activity just because of legal concerns, but it hasn't stopped adversaries, right? Is defending forward, this new sort of more aggressive defending forward, a response to the actions of countries like Russia and China?
I think it is a response. I think it's a recognition that not taking action is actually escalatory, right? Because if you don't take action to push back, then adversaries see that they're not going to have consequences to that, and they start testing the line even further and building up to even more significant cyber attacks. So I think, you know, not taking action actually pushes you potentially in an escalatory direction. So we've spent a lot of this time debating, if the military conducts X, Y, or Z operation in cyberspace, is that going to be escalatory? And that's still a big part of the debate that we see ongoing now. And there is definitely the possibility that a unwise or not very carefully thought out operation could have an escalatory effect, but you also have to balance that against the possibility that by not taking action, you're sending a signal that these kinds of activities are okay.
Is it fair to say that the United States operates, conducts these operations under tighter legal review than its adversaries?
I mean, I think, I would say so. The United States is a country of the rule of law. And, you know, you've talked about that in some of your other discussions. And that comes with legal reviews of operational proposals that I don't think many of our adversaries are necessarily tying themselves in those kind of knots.
And I guess the reason I ask that is...
And that's a good thing.
Well, yeah, but I'm curious the degree to which that puts you at a disadvantage, right? Now, I'm not saying, like, this is in no way me advocating, oh, well, you know, just take those pesky laws and set them on fire. That's not why I bring that up. But I just wonder, like, you know, does that put you at a significant strategic disadvantage?
I don't think it has to. If you have well thought out delegations, so in the case of some of the new authorities that loosen some of the restrictions, I don't know exactly how those new authorities are playing out for the United States, but you could imagine if you set out certain kinds of activities that are delegated down to lower levels and you have clear guidelines of what those are and what the limits are, you can undertake a legal review within that context so that you're not having to come back every single time you want to conduct a single operation, but you've still done the right kind of legal review and look at how the law applies to a set of activities.
Sure. I guess the reason I ask is because I can't really imagine, you know, NSA or Cyber Command or various bits of the US government or US government agencies, getting involved in collecting intelligence that would be used to inform, a major US corporation's negotiations with a Chinese partner, for example, which is something that China does to Western countries. I guess that's the sort of question I've got around the one hand tied behind the back when it comes to operating with some modicum of respect for the law.
Yeah, I suppose so. And it's not just the law, it's norms of what we believe to be responsible. If we decide to engage in that, we're sending a signal that that is,
that's acceptable, the way things are done.
Activity, and that's the way things are done. And so you could see an environment that that just grows and grows and more actors start getting engaged in that kind of commercial theft. When in fact, what we want is for China to stop doing that, and maybe through indictments, sanctions, pressure, negotiation, diplomacy, pushing back through defensive operations, that those things can get China to stop that activity. Mm. And that puts you in a better place ultimately than in deciding that everybody will just get in on that business.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny what you say, right? Like, I guess the thing is you're playing the same game, but you're kind of operating under different rules, but that doesn't mean you can't be effective. I mean, you did mention indictments. You also mentioned defensive operations. And one of the things is like there's so much of this stuff is cloaked in euphemism, right? What is a defensive operation? I mean, does that mean burning down an APT crew's infrastructure? Does that mean going after them, doxing them? Like, what does that even mean, right? Yeah. Please tell me, because it's very hard to get people to come on record and actually say in plain language, what is a defensive operation in a defend forward context?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's a lot of confusion about this. And when somebody says an offensive cyber operation, you know, forget defensive cyber operation. When somebody says offensive cyber operation,
we know what that means.
A whole lot of different, well, no, I don't even think people do, because you could, you know, be undertaking an action that feels very defensive in nature, like preventing your whatever intellectual property from getting stolen. But if you're doing that outside of your own networks, right, is that defensive or is that offensive?
Well, that was the question that I was asking there, actually.
So, you know, I don't think anybody has outlined clearly those definitions. And to be honest, I think that there are widly varying opinions on what they are.
Isn't this fascinating, right? That here we are in 2019, right, and we're having a conversation about what constitutes offense versus defense, because, you know, for a long time we've argued that they're you know, the opposite sides of the same coin, but now it's like, what, different mixed halves of a sphere? Like, I don't know, the metaphors right, are starting to break down, right? It's getting a little bit confusing. What is defense? What is offense? Especially yeah, with the shift in posture, you know, with organizations like Cyber Command doing what they do, it does feel like things have meaningfully shifted over the last few years. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. If you look at the history, you know, and I came into this business in early 2010s, and in that time, you have to remember we were having big debates about whether we consider this a domain. Is everything that we're doing, even talking about having a cyber command, is that militarizing cyberspace?
I remember that conversation.
We've moved on from that.
Yeah, and that was a good conversation, yeah, because it was like, hang on, this is a civilian network. Why, you know, get your grubby military hands off it was kind of the thinking back then. But it's, you know, right, I guess the events of the last 9 or 10 years have kind of required, hasn't it? I mean, it's just impossible to imagine it working out another way where the internet was just left alone completely. It was never going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you think about the military operates in, you know, on the high seas, right, and in a lot of different domains, it doesn't necessarily mean we're militarizing those domains. But, you know, I think it was a good conversation that needed to be had, especially given the U.S. principles of a secure and open and reliable internet, those still being first and foremost principles that the country wants to protect. But back then, you know, it was so close to intelligence. You know, we weren't thinking about cyber operations in a distinct way that we do now from intelligence missions. So, you know, in that time, you'd have maybe somebody from the Air Force start talking about cyber as a weapon system, you know, and you just brace for the nasty gram that you're going to get from the White House about that. But fast forward to 2015, the Secretary of Defense is talking about cyber bombs, and we're really openly talking about offensive cyber operations against ISIS. And that was something that was very deliberate as we started thinking through the need to talk openly and transparently to the American people about what the military is doing that in this space. We talk openly about that in other domains, and we needed to start doing that in this one too.
Now, it's always made sense for, you know, a military agency or even, you know, different departments within agencies themselves to provide some sort of support role to military operations, right? That might be something as simple as disabling communications for an adversary when there's an actual military conflict going on. What's interesting now, and especially with regard to recent developments, I mean, we've had, you know, Israel's strike against a Hamas, you know, an alleged Hamas cyber unit during a recent conflict between Israel and Palestine. We have also seen this stuff kick off in Iran. And I think this is fascinating on multiple levels. We've got this weird situation where we've got the US government targeting rocket batteries in Iran. And you've been talking about escalation just earlier. You were talking about escalation. I can't see how that is escalatory, to be honest, because it's nonviolent. It's clearly just defensive, and it really changes the risk calculations on the Iranian side when all of a sudden they can't rely on some of their weapons systems. What's your general take on that whole episode?
Yeah, I saw the reporting too. I'm not in the government anymore, of
course.
Okay,
disclaimer noted, yes.
But to me, it was a proportional, sensible, understandable cyber operation that appeared would have appeared to me if I were Iran as a direct and proportional response. And so to me, it has a very useful purpose in either at least not escalating or perhaps even de-escalating. There's been for a long time, we've talked about cyber operations having the potential to be less escalatory and to help manage conflict for the very purpose that they don't have to cause kinetic or lethal impacts. And this was one of the first reported incidents that I've seen where that kind of role for a cyber operation was pretty clear on the face of it.
To me, the thing that made it so interesting was the effect of having, you know, just an operation that was designed to show, it was basically designed to demonstrate to the Iranian government that they couldn't necessarily depend on their defense systems. And that to me is what made it so interesting. I mean, is that the thing that caught you about it as well, in terms of it being a both a proportionate response and a, you know, a really good deterrent?
Yes, that's what caught my attention as well. And there were several commentators following that report that said, "Oh, well, they've Cyber Command has burned their access."
Yeah, no, I saw that, yeah. And I said, I don't know if you've heard, I had a comment to Adam just saying, "Can you imagine trying to evict Cyber Command off your network?" I don't think that's going to be a good time, personally. So I don't necessarily agree with those commentators.
Yeah, well, and first of all, maybe you did burn it, but what do you have these for if not to burn them for the purposes of achieving a strategic objective? And secondly, if I were Iran, I guess I would wonder if they were willing to burn this access, does that mean that they have other accesses that they...
Yeah.
Feel confident in burning this one.
Well, and not just other access techniques, but probably some persistence. Like, they're not just going to do that and not have any persistence options. Like, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, I think we would just really be speculating, but I think in terms of the message that sends to the recipients of that kind of operation, you know, It seems sensible to me.
Yeah, it felt good, right? But on the flip side, now here's where it gets interesting, right? Because it might have acted as a deterrent in terms of hot military conflict, as you would say. But on the flip side, Iranian APT crews just started going berserk when that happened. And I've spoken to many people who observe this sort of activity, people in government, people in the private sector, and they just said, oh boy, they're going wild, right? So we've got this weird situation where on one hand, you've got the United States using a cyber operation to deter Iran from performing various military actions, bombs, rockets, taking over ships, things like that. And on the other hand, you've got Iran sort of retaliating by showing the United States that it can cause harm within its borders, right? Which is an escalation. So this mm-hmm. looks like what started as a military conflict could actually wind up, you know, we used to say, if you hack us, we'll bomb you. And that used to be the whole thinking around, around this stuff. And now I think it was Gruck who pointed out, it's actually now if you bomb us, we'll hack you, right? Because this seems like a low-cost way for an adversary like Iran to inflict some damage on the United States. This isn't a dynamic that I was sort of anticipating, right? But it makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, to your first point, I do agree that even in cases where the short-term escalation, is not really a challenge, you do still have to think about the long-term kind of systemic impacts of increased cyber operations like this. Do more countries look at this kind of activity and say, wow, I really need to invest and do more in this and start doing more of it openly? Or does Iran take a pause, make sure their networks are defended a little bit better, and proceed to bolster up their own cyber capabilities and feel willing to do more operations against the United States in the future? So it's not just going to be a really easily identifiable cycle of escalation within the context of a conflict, as you say. Mm. But it could have these longer term impacts that I just think it's important that cyber command and policymakers account for those too. But don't at the same time get themselves so wrapped up in all the what ifs that they feel paralyzed.
So, Kate, I guess from what you're saying, it feels like so far so good, but we don't quite know yet. You know, we haven't quite established norms around the thinking around this stuff, if that makes sense. So, you know, things have worked out, I guess, in this instance, largely to the advantage of the United States, but there's still a lot of unexplored territory here. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. And I also think that it's a testament to General Nakasone, to the policymakers and the Pentagon, that so far these loosened restrictions on the authorities have been used and wielded in what appear to be pretty appropriate ways. But we don't really know what the new policy on offensive operations, how much it delegates and how much looser those restrictions are.
Well, we have seen news reports saying that, President Trump wasn't notified of certain actions taken by Cyber Command, which made a lot of people double take, and I think justifiably. What are your thoughts on that?
I guess so. I mean, I don't really know because, I think what was reported was that President Trump was not briefed on all the details of it, right? So I don't really know the facts, what's not facts, but the truth is if the policy delegates it down to the Secretary of Defense, you should expect that an agency would brief that upwards, but that not every aspect of it is going to get up to the president if it's something that has been delegated.
So I guess where you're going with that is that, it's been portrayed a little bit in some of the coverage like it's a Cyber Command free-for-all, and you don't think that's an accurate characterization.
Well, I did worry when I was leaving, the pendulum of how restrictive this was at kind of one end of the spectrum, I think. And I worried that when I left that the pendulum had the possibility to swing to the other end, which is too loose and not restrictive enough. Seems to me it's landed in a pretty stable spot right now. But I don't know how much of that is just because we've got some really smart people at the helm within the Department of Defense who are thinking through these issues pretty wisely.
This is all far from settled.
Yes, I agree.
So, look, another thing I wanted to speak to you about, there's been this really weird proposal here in Australia being driven, from what I understand and, from what my sources tell me, being driven out of the Home Affairs Department to try to somehow loop the Australian Signals Directorate into child exploitation material investigations. It's all very strange. But, we have seen a trend over the last sort of 5 years where or, you know, all of a sudden, you know, NSA people, it used to be no such agency, and now they're turning up at DEF CON and doing talks and coming onto podcasts. And, you know, this isn't just NSA. ASD is kind of doing the same thing here. They're really putting on their friendly face, trying to get engaged, which makes a lot of sense, given that the internet is their domain. And, you know, this is where it's critical to society, critical to business, right? So that trend we certainly understand. But I wonder what your feelings are in terms of future roles for military and intelligence agencies in covering stuff that has traditionally been seen as a matter for civilian law enforcement. Because when I look at things like the ransomware attacks that are plaguing the United States at the moment, particularly municipalities, police services, schools, things like that, I do wonder if those challenges actually rise to being possibly considered a national security issue, you know, and if that is the case, you know, should agencies like Cyber Command be given permission to just go and ruin the lives of ransomware operators? I just wanted your opinions on that.
Yeah, so I think that there is a natural area of partnership, frankly, and that there needs to be even more than there is today between law enforcement and the military and the agencies like the Department of Homeland Security and their analogs in other countries, because these threats, cyber threats, are global. And, you know, you can't just say inside the borders it's the FBI and outside the borders it's the military, because threats don't operate that way. So, you know, if there are major attacks and, you know, we're seeing constant ransomware, you know, and that's coming from infrastructure that is outside of the United States or threat actors or nations that are outside the United States, I think the military does have a role. It may not be the prominent or the most important role. I think DHS and law enforcement in those cases would be the lead. But I have started to see in areas like the financial sector more work being done as to how companies and DHS and FBI and the military can all be interacting in a more day-to-day level to understand how they have different capabilities that they can apply to the challenge in a way that is coherent. But it comes down to me to priorities. Are the strategic priorities for the United States anyways are very clearly China and Russia and day-to-day competition with those countries, Iran and North Korea as threats in cyberspace that are also very high on the list. And so while capability is growing and while, you know, you do want to have a certain level of flexibility, it does take kind of planning and focus and a little bit of a durable focus, not just moving around and shifting on a constant basis.
So maybe bigger fish to fry, I think, is the takeaway there.
In one sense, yes. Priorities, bigger fish to fry, focus on military and strategic competitors, but not losing sight of where the trends are going. I mean, that's not to say that you should just bury your head in the sand and focus only on four actors and not care where the other 26 that supposedly have offensive cyber programs, where they're going and what they're doing until one day you realize that you aren't tracking that. I think you don't want to be completely inflexible, but at the same time, I think it is correct to set out priorities for where you focus your resources.
I guess though, one thing is when people even hear vague talk about looping military or intelligence agencies into matters that, even though they're occurring outside of you know, the United States borders or the Australian borders, it makes people very nervous to consider that a military agency or a intelligence agency might be used to tackle something that was traditionally law enforcement, because that separation is sort of sacrosanct. So I'd imagine that, you know, in any engagement or investigation that is going to be focusing on, say, very high impact crime, you know, cybercrime, or indeed in the local context, child exploitation material, you know, anything like that, the oversight around that would be tremendously important. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, I would agree. But I would also say that you have to look at which of your tools is going to be most effective for a particular problem. So if you're looking at ransomware that's taking advantage of, you know, old unpatched systems, it probably is the case that engagement and, engagement with cities, engagement with victims, and upping the level of cyber hygiene is probably going to be more impact approach than trying to send the military after them.
Yeah.
Whereas a very highly capable adversary against which many operators don't necessarily have that, that much of a chance, but I guess a determined adversary, that's an area where you might want, those capabilities.
Well, Catherine Charlotte, that was all fascinating stuff. I really appreciate you taking the time to have this conversation with me. I'm sure the listeners also really enjoyed it. And I hope we can do it again one day. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you very much. I hope so too.
That was Kate Charlotte there in a conversation I found absolutely fascinating. I do hope you enjoyed it yourselves. Big thanks to the Hewlett Foundation for making this podcast series possible. I'll be back next week with another weekly news edition of the show. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.